This message is brought to you by Apple Card. Apply for Apple Card today and start earning up to 3% daily cash back on everyday purchases. And that daily cash can even grow automatically when you open a high-yield savings account through Apple Card. What are you waiting for? Visit apple.co/cardcalculator today to see how much daily cash you can earn. Subject to credit approval, savings available to Apple Card owners, subject to eligibility, savings, and Apple Card by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Our world is marked by divisions, and we're not sure how to engage neighbors across differences. I'm Nicole Argo, the founder and executive director at the Together Up Institute.
And I'm Scott Hutchison, the executive director of E Pluribus Unum. On Reimagining Us, we'll be talking to behavioral scientists, change makers, and educators to hear true stories of people bridging divides and finding common ground.
Learn more at togetherup.org/reimagining us.
This episode is sponsored by SimpliSafe. I'm excited to tell you about a company revolutionizing home security. I am now using SimpliSafe, and I'm so impressed by their ActiveGuard outdoor protection that uses AI-powered cameras and real human agents to monitor what's happening outside my home. Rather than reacting after something's gone wrong, SimpliSafe steps in if something looks off. It's security that thinks ahead. It's peace of mind that's become part of my daily rhythm. Arming my system each night, knowing my home is protected. And you can try it this summer too with a 60-day money-back guarantee. No contracts, no cancellation fees, just reliable protection starting at around $1 a day. Listeners can get 50% off their new SimpliSafe system with professional monitoring and their first month free at simplisafe.com/TED Talks Daily. That's SimpliSafe.com/TED Talks Daily. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
You're listening to TED Talks Daily, where we bring you new ideas and conversations to spark your curiosity every day. I'm Kelly Corrigan. I'm a writer, I'm a podcaster, I'm a TED Talker, and I am taking over for Elise Hugh this week for a special series on AI and family life. I guest curated a session about this topic at TED 2025, and I'm here now to share these very special talks with you, along with behind-the-scenes recordings and personal insights that shed light on the process of bringing them to life. Sarah Blaffer-Herdy is such a delight. She's almost 80 years old. She takes no guff from nobody, and she is a true expert in her field. She's an American anthropologist and primatologist. She's made huge contributions to evolutionary psychology and sociobiology. She won a Guggenheim, she went to Harvard, blah, blah, blah. But she really, really understands evolution and the way mothers and fathers have over time been understood, misunderstood, and re-understood. So when I first started talking about this fundamental question, in a modern world, in an AI world, what is a parent for? I knew that we needed somebody who could give us the broadest possible view, you know, like the 6 million year look at us as a species and our evolution and the way that we have typically raised children. And there's something about Sarah, really. She has such a twinkle in her eye. She's such a happy academic. Like, this is what she was born to do, was take on really big, weird questions like this.
Okay, but so let me ask this. Like, my head is exploding. This is such a fun project. If you were to convince the audience that a baby's number one slot is up for grabs.
Oh, that's a lovely way to put it.
She's probably most famous for surfacing this idea of alloparents, which means other parents. So there was this sort of resting belief that infants were completely attached to their mother in a singular way. And the idea that she introduced is, that can't possibly be true. they'd never have survived. They're very needy. They're very expensive little creatures. It takes them forever to stand up on their own and move into the world. And because of that, there's no way that there weren't other mothers involved in the rearing of these children, which means that children can attach to people who are not their mother. Sarah's so fun to work with because she wasn't thinking about AI at all. When we first called her, I think she thought, oh, I'm going to talk about the things I typically talk about. I mean, she goes around the world giving talks.
The super theme of TED this year is humanity reimagined.
Yes.
And it's, you know, what's a human for? In an AI world, what's a human for? And so our block is kind of what's a mother for?
Well, if you ask me what is, and I have multiple choice and I can only give one answer. What is a human for? What did we evolve for? Caretaking. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you have to be a biological, a genetic parent. I don't like the term biological mother. I think there is a tremendous alloparental potential for care that hasn't been recognized yet. And I think it needs to be recognized.
And I put this idea in front of her, like, can you imagine a reality where AI is involved intimately in the rearing of children? Could they attach to an AI?
We wondered if you might be interested in teaching the audience something about mothers and allomothers and why this is the ultimate job for humans that can never be replaced in any meaningful way by any other type of intelligence.
Never?
Ha ha ha. That's a good scientist. Not never, I guess, not never.
She had this huge smile in the call and she said, interesting. And then off she went. And within, it felt like minutes, she had delivered back a draft of a talk.
So before we go too much further into the near future, maybe the move is to go all the way back. And frankly, after spending time with Sarah Hurdy, I think all serious inquiries about what's right for humanity should include a world-class anthropologist.
So here is Sarah Hurdy giving us 6 million years of human evolution in 9 minutes.
I guess you've already figured out, like it or not, artificial intelligence is going to change the nature of human work. But will it change human nature? That's going to depend on what we do with it. Right away, the mother and the grandmother in me wants to know, oh, hey, can we program robots to help us care for our sleep depriving, time-consuming babies? That's before the evolutionary anthropologist in me cautions, whoa, shouldn't we first ask why such costly, costly, slow-maturing babies evolved in the first place? For that, we need to go back, 6 million years, to when humans last shared a common ancestor with other apes. Babies back then would have to be held in skin-to-skin contact, never out of touch, not for a minute of the day or night, for months after birth, nursed for years. It just seemed natural to assume that among the bipedal apes in the line leading to the genus Homo, babies could similarly expect single-mindedly dedicated maternal care. Until, that is, anthropologists figured out how hard it would have been for bipedal apes with only Stone Age tools to survive and escape extinction in the face of climate change and other Pleistocene perils. To stay fed and manage to still rear their helpless, helpless, slow-maturing babies, mothers needed help. Unless male and female group members other than the mother, allomothers, had helped to care for and provision babies, there is no way we humans could have evolved. Fortunately for us, as brains were getting bigger and distinctively human prefrontal cortices were taking shape, our ancestors were increasingly sharing food and sharing care of children. Neural circuits, crucial for mutual understanding, co-evolved right along with shared care. Fast forward to the ever faster changing modern world. Mothers still labor to help support their families, as mothers always have. But many no longer live in mutually supportive communities with kin far away, and even with dads helping more. Allo mothers were in short supply. Good daycare, even if available, unaffordable. No wonder parents everywhere use devices to keep their babies monitored and entertained. Already, 40% of US 2-year-olds have their own tablets. Soon, robots will be programmed to provide a wider range of services, ranging from bottle feeding to keeping babies safe, warm, cleaned, and even educated. But given the role of engagement with others in the emergence of mutual understanding, is this a good idea? Think back to our hunter-gatherer ancestors, still living and rearing children. Babies then, to stay safe, still needed to be held by somebody, but that somebody did not have to be their mother. Right after birth, others might reach for the baby, allows others to gather round. She's passed her baby to her own mother to massage its scalp. If one of these allo mothers happens to be nursing, the baby's first sweet taste of milk will come from her. Soon, babies will be monitoring nearby others, deciding who responds, figuring out how best to engage and appeal to them. By 6 months, the sharp little milk teeth are picking through their gums. Their appeals might be rewarded with kiss-fed treats, maybe honey-sweetened saliva or pre-masticated meat. And babies soon are learning to reciprocate, starting to share. Babies everywhere will just spontaneously offer food to somebody else, anybody, really. Active agents in their own survival, babies are flexible about who or what they attach or consider as family. Something to keep in mind: if robots are programmed to respond even more rapidly and reliably than preoccupied parents do. And as they get older, they will spontaneously point to things or hold something out as if saying, "What do you think of this? What should I think of this?" Eager to engage with other minds and learn what they're thinking. They care very much who notices them do something nice, like a toddler rushing to pick up something someone has dropped and hand it back. They care not just with what others think, but with what others think about them, their reputations. As developmental psychologists were learning just how other regarding human babies are, neuroscientists using new baby-friendly technologies made a surprising discovery. With a soft wired cap slipped on the baby's head, neural activity was detected in the medial prefrontal cortex long before most neuroscientists even assumed it was active yet. As babies process eye gaze, actions, deciding who to trust, emulate, and love, little humans process their physical world in much the same way other apes do. Nothing much different there. It's in these social realms where they really differ. Intersubjective sensibilities starting to emerge early in life, right along with targeted social smiles. Brain circuitry that evolved to help babies elicit care and survive prepared our ancestors to mature into adults able to communicate and cooperate in new ways, whether constructing shelters or processing and sharing food, or eventually, one day, collaborating with widely dispersed others in order to send robots to Mars. Tens of thousands of years from now, assuming Homo sapiens aiensis is still around, whether on this planet or some other, I have no doubt that they will be bipedal, symbol-generating apes, technologically proficient in ways we can't even dream of yet. But will they still be human in the way we think of humans today? Interested in the thoughts and emotions of others, eligible for mutual understanding. That's going to depend on how, by whom, or what they are reared. Thank you.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a short break. So I learned that when you're working with a scientist, a serious scientist, they are very conscientious about exactly how they phrase things. And so my efforts to make her talk more ready for a generalist audience rather than an audience full of academics had to accommodate her very high bar for specificity, and there couldn't be a single overstatement. And so, you know, you have that situation where you're trying to marry something fairly detailed with a very general audience, especially the online audience, who are bouncing around in the middle of their ordinary day, and then they might fall into this talk. You don't want to lose them at the top by going into excruciating detail about the history of Homo sapiens. So the work with Sarah was really about what is the basic scaffolding that we can offer at the top such that we can get into this bigger, weirder question of what defines our species in terms of how we interact and develop, and then how might that change and create like a new species. So for all of you who weren't there, I want you to know that the audience gasped when she showed this slide of a little baby making eye contact with a mombot, because right before that, she had set up this very basic truth, which is babies will respond to whomever responds to them, whether that person or that thing is man or machine.
You know, the mother-infant bond is so basic, and the most powerful emotion in all of nature, I think, is an infant's desire to be close to the caretaker. And of course, that is most often the mother, because she's right there and she's nursing and so forth. But it turns out that babies can come to love anyone. If they are responsive and right there, right from birth, they attach to whoever is responsive and caretaking, and those people come to love them. So is that a family tie? It has to do with the context in which the emotions are elicited.
Couldn't it be that three speakers later, the AI guy would say, right, and if it's up for grabs, if it's not written in the code of our beings, then the number one slot could be taken by Mombot?
It easily could be, but would we want that? Because
the Mombot has no perspective.
Yes, or you could instill one in it. But I find that very scary.
But you were saying if a nerdy tech bro is going to create a Mombot.
What does he know about love and human emotions?
What
and
if you were to create the Mombot? Someone who does know about love and human emotion.
You couldn't pay me enough to do it. You
what if someone just like you would be amenable to the job?
The other huge takeaway I had from Sarah is that, of course, once you settle into her talk, you're thinking we're always changing. We're always moving into a slightly different version of our species. And so it helps to know what is the defining feature. And in Sarah's telling, it's being other regarding. It's the only way that we could ever survive. But to my ear, other regarding sounded kind of beautiful and special and something that we should be preserving.
When I listen to you, the thing I feel lifted by is that this other regardingness is, to me, deeply encouraging.
It is, but it's not what everybody wants. In a different society, they want a society full of shameless warriors who are not burdened by having to care about somebody else, who are just out there doing it. And they are social contexts where that would be advantageous. You know, when I started writing Father Time and was thinking of more male care, I was so much more optimistic about where we were headed than I am today.
Sitting here today, do you have a sense of what would be lost?
I think babies are constantly probing. I think it's about who's going to help me. How do I ingratiate myself with this other human? This is laying the neural groundworks for being a cooperative person later on, to understand the intentions of others, coming to trust others and learning that you can trust others or not. So this is where this comes from. And empathy is an excellent tool if we're able to see things from someone else's point of view, which you were asking me to do all the time in communicating with this audience. You're saying, well, try to see it from their perspective. That's what we could lose. I would hope that a message would be society has a responsibility for shared care and group care.
I mean, this is a talk to linger on, that it's as simple as responsiveness, that's what the connection, the attachment is based on, is who is responding to this baby. That is really a stop and stare moment for me. Like, we have to look at that squarely, accept the fact of it, and operate accordingly.
To say that I'm worried about it is true. But, you know, I'm 80 years old. I'm a dinosaur. I'm not adapted to this world. It's changing. So at the beginning of Mother Nature, I said, you know, here I am, this mammal with the ovaries of an ape and the brain of a Homo sapiens, trying to adapt to a world that's changing fast. Well, guess what? Quarter of a century later, it's changing even faster. And every day is a source of new frustration for me. And I feel dehumanized.
Because if we set up a bunch of AI robots that give a baby and a toddler everything he or she wants along the way, we will for sure be changing the species. And that is a big deal.
I'm worried because the products of AI are so addictive. And we may lose something and not even realize what we're missing enough to rebel. That's the scary part. But there were some high-tech guys who really seemed to think that more technology was the answer, right? And I wonder if they realize the power of what they're dealing with.
The thing you taught me is that we are an other regarding species. Mm-hmm. That is like this definitional thing about us. So if that's true, could we count on it to save us from this, like...
No, because it's not
innate. Damn it, Sarah. That's not the answer I was looking for.
The problem...
I want to end this on a positive.
So over the course of this whole project, my little cohort of speakers, these six people... really fell in love with each other.
You were so amazing, though. The entire relationship, putting it through and everything.
Yeah, it was just so great.
I mean, there was so much support and love backstage for one another. And Sarah was like the leader. You know, she was like the emotional moral center of Team Corrigan.
We need to make merch. We need inner fish, inner mother. Like, there's so many lines that have come up that would make like the best bumper stickers and t-shirts.
Yeah. And she was so gracious about saying how much she learned from the rest of us. And I think that is really humanity at its best.
Sarah, you mischievous. You're like 18 at heart. Don't you feel that way?
Until I looked at that lady, but yeah.
So thank you for bringing so much credibility and background and history and research into our team.
And thank you, Kelly, for your meaningful mentoring and for really creating this community among us, which is kind of an art. You brought out our humanity. You reminded us, oh, you're human.
And that's it for today. Come back tomorrow for a conversation and a talk with a woman who has led two very different lives, Danini Kimisera Sekar. TED Talks Daily is part of the TED Audio Collective. This episode was produced and mixed by Lucy Little, edited by Alejandra Salazar, and fact-checked by the TED research team. The TED Talks Daily team includes Martha Estapanos, Oliver Friedman, Brian Green, and Tansika Sungmar-Nivong. Additional support from Emma Taubner and Daniela Valarezo. I'm Kelly Corrigan, guest host of TED Talks Daily, here for a special week of content around the topic of AI and family life. Thanks for listening. And please join me at my podcast, Kelly Corrigan Wonders, wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. We'll do that. That's no problem.
Although, I mean, I should just say, Sarah, we could change your life here with Google Docs.
Okay.
I'm going to send you one just in case you love it instantly.
Okay. Okay. But we will send you the Word docs to make it your life easier so you're not adapting to a new format just for us. And we can meet anytime in between those drafts. So the ideal situation would be kind of like three great back and forths on your draft before March.
And I will probably end up thinking, why didn't I learn these life skills from Chloe and Kelly soon? I'm age 80 before I learn them, but okay.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Our world is marked by divisions, and we're not sure how to engage neighbors across differences. I'm Nicole Argo, the founder and executive director at the Together Up Institute.
And I'm Scott Hutchison, the executive director of E Pluribus Uno. On Reimagining Us, we'll be talking to behavioral scientists, change makers, and educators to hear true stories of people bridging divides and finding common ground.
Learn more at togetherup.org/reimagining us.
Imagine a toilet so striking it inspired a couture dress. That's right. Kohler's Veil Smart Toilet in honed black actually inspired fashion designer Laura Kim to create a stunning black chiffon dress that debuted on the runway at New York Fashion Week. The Veil Smart Toilet, with its curved design, deep, rich, textural color, touchscreen controls, and customizable cleansing features, can transform your routine into something extraordinary. That's the power of design. Design changes everything. Veil Smart Toilet in honed black, only from Kohler. Discover the Veil Smart Toilet and go behind the scenes of Kohler's partnership with creative director Laura Kim at Kohler.com.